It's Monday, March 14th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a partner of the Tech Podcast Network, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. And boy, oh boy, lots to talk about. And man, just an absolute tragedy with the news coming out of Japan. But we'll talk about that and a lot more tech here in just a few minutes. So you know what comes next. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran, and I want to welcome you to the Geek News Central podcast. Make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all our great content. Of course, check out our archive podcast, either it be video or audio, via the podcast link on the website. While you're visiting the website, make sure you get signed up or subscribe to the show via iTunes, Zoom Marketplace. You can also, of course, pick up the RSS feed for your favorite podcatcher, whether it be in a BlackBerry or any other device that you may be using or software package. And get subscribed to the show so that you will never miss a single episode of the Geek News Central podcast. Okay, as well, there's a newsletter option for you. If you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get all the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. The show notes contain everything that I'm going to basically cover tonight, along with the submissions made by audience members like you. If you have comments on tonight's show, you can do that via sending me an email at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Or you can call a voicemail hotline, which is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at area code 619-342-7365. For our international listeners, you can dial +1 619-342-7365. Hello, everyone. How's you doing? Welcome to the show. Of course, it's an early Monday evening here in Honolulu, time for our twice-weekly show. Of course, I record the show every Monday and Thursday night for a Tuesday and Friday morning release. So that way it's produced like clockwork. Very rarely do we miss the schedule. So I hope that you'll tune in and, stay subscribed is the main thing. For all of you that are longtime listeners and part of the Ohana, thanks for being here, being part of the family. If you're watching us on the Roku or on Boxy, hey, thanks for kicking back in your lazy boy or, sprawling out on the couch and watching me this way. It's appreciated. And of course, if you're watching live tonight on Justin.tv or Ustream, welcome along for the ride. Well, I tell you, it's been an interesting few days. As during the very beginning of the last show, one of the listeners of the podcast basically said, "Hey, Todd, there was an earthquake in Japan." And by the time the show wrapped up, an hour and 15 minutes later, I was getting fed tidbits of information basically by people that were following the show. And shortly thereafter, of course, the tragic tsunami hit. Actually, probably the tsunami hit long before the show was over. And then we went into a tsunami warning here in Hawaii. So I really, I kind of didn't know fully the extent of what was really happening during the live show. I was getting fed some stuff, but I was going through the full tech content and got done and immediately punched out and brought up CNN and Fox and all the other sites, NHK, which is a Japanese television station, and started to, try to get information, and it became very obvious very quick that it was bad. And I think over the past 4 days or so here, or 5 days, we've all been inundated by news and information. Some of it is just incomprehensible, really, considering the loss of life, loss of property, damage to the Japanese infrastructure, the literally billions and billions of dollars of damage. I think I read somewhere where there was like 68,000 1,000 homes and businesses and buildings had been forevermore destroyed. My wife, who has friends in Sendai, which is basically ground zero for that 23-foot wall of water that hit, she still has not. Of course, there's no communications coming out of that region yet, except for very spotty stuff. So we wouldn't be on her immediate call list, but you know, basically reaching out to her friends. No one has heard anything yet, so we're so concerned about, you know, friends we have in the region and people that we've known for years. So it's pretty surreal. And being that my wife is from Okinawa, which was not affected at all by the tsunami or the earthquake, and of course being detached from the main island there in Japan, I'm really, I guess you don't want, do you even call Japan an island or is it a peninsula? But irregardless, on Okinawa, the family's fine. Everyone's doing good. Everyone was in Okinawa. No one was on the mainland of Japan. But I think we all are pretty just sitting here kind of with our mouths wide open, having observed what has taken place. The whole situation with the nuclear reactors is very concerning. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I kind of scratch my head a little bit because here we are, we're at this time frame when we're reaching a crisis point on burning oil. And here in Honolulu, of course, all our electricity is provided by oil, burning oil. There's no coal here. There's no nuclear. Well, there's some down in, supposedly there's nuclear power plants down in Pearl Harbor Shipyard with some ships down there. At least that's what rumors say. And I think all of you well know that. But really, we're at this point where it was maybe time to start looking at nuclear again as an option. And here we've got really a very bad situation progressing. And basically, it's one hit after another. I think I read somewhere or heard just before we started the show that the number 4 reactor at the facility was having trouble as well, maybe a fire. Radiation levels were up where they removed 800 workers and left 50 folks there. It's kind of like last-ditch efforts to man the fire hoses or whatever they're going to do. But not boding well for that facility. And all we can do is keep our fingers crossed that we'll get some semblance of control of this thing. But if you think about it, a 9.0 earthquake, and those of you that have followed the show know that when I lived in Guam, I was experienced an 8.1, and the earthquake occurred like 50 miles in the Marianas Trench away from Guam. There was no tidal wave or no tsunami, but it was significant. It bounced me out of a kind of like a chair that I'm sitting in right now, and ours was very short, maybe 30 seconds, and yet this one was very long, and I think in Guam we only had to implode 2 or 3 buildings there. Most of the structures are made of concrete just because they have to sustain typhoon winds of 200 miles per hour. So, you know, that earthquake being an 8.1, as violent as it was, and as far away as epicenter was on that, where I was, I can't even imagine what the 8.9 with the basically much longer lasting, how it could have even have felt like. You know, it really, you know, the one in Guam got my attention. I believe that was 84, 87, 88, 91, 94. It was after 94, I think. I have to go back and look at some dates. But anyway, long story short, it was bad. Really, really bad there. And so what I'm going to be doing is, obviously, this is touches close to home for us, being, of course, again, since my wife is a Japanese from Japan. And I'm going to be participating this coming Friday in a 24-hour podcast produced by some folks that do anime podcasts. I'll be coming on, I think, at midnight Eastern, I think, is when I come online. I'm going to talk, I think, for an hour with them about new media space and about Japan and whatever we want to talk about with those guys. So I'll be showing up there doing an hour rendition. But I want to challenge all of you to make sure you, you know, support the cause, and hope you can donate some money to the Red Cross. Make sure you designate it towards the Japanese situation. And we appreciate it. And I will be ponying up my donation on the 24-hour show that these guys are doing then. But love to hear comments and thoughts. And love to really hear what you think about the nuclear situation. Because as I was saying, we were at a crossroads where we really, at this point, really needed to start looking at that as an option. But I think that what's going to end up happening is we may spend another 30 years twiddling our thumbs, determining whether or not we want to go that route again. I don't know, you know, but this 9.0 was a, you know, probably once in a 100 or 200 year event in a very specific region that is known for earthquakes. But, you know, can we not move forward even though we've got this situation there? Can we not? I just can't imagine that we can. I just think that we have to. I don't know. I'd love to hear you guys' feedback. 619-342-7365. Hey, I want to, let's get through the rest of the stuff. We'll get into the regular content here. I got a Roku to give away. But again, love to hear you guys' feedback on the commentary here about Japan as well. Hey, GoDaddy's a longtime sponsor here of the show. We want to thank GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor. And if you're looking for hosting accounts, whether it be a shared hosting account, whether it be a dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, whether it be just, you know, registering an SSL certificate or using one of their aftermarket products, when you get to the checkout, excuse me, counter, don't forget your geek here at Geek News Central. Use a promo code GEEK5 to save 15% on orders $20 or more. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. If you're a new customer to GoDaddy, you can save 25% on your first order by using CES25. All of those codes can be found back over at geeknewscentral.com. All you got to do is come down to the second column of the website. There's a little link there. It says GoDaddy promo codes. You click on that. It's going to load up the page. It's going to give you all the codes that I have there where you can save a lot of money over at GoDaddy.com. We appreciate GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here and hope that you'll continue to support GoDaddy through purchases of products and services. I had a little problem with one of our tech podcasters. Had a problem with his GoDaddy account this weekend. And forwarded up through the food chain at GoDaddy. And I think there might be some changes coming to some, again, once again, some adjustments to customer service. So it's nice to see that they're responsive to issues that people have, and maybe not an exact response. But it's nice that I have this direct relationship with them. And if you have a problem with your account, you can always send me an issue or send me an email with a comment, and I will forward that to basically the top of the food chain. And it always gets action. I'm telling you, straight up, it does. So thanks, GoDaddy, again, for being a sponsor here. Let's talk about the contest that we had. We had 18 people become insiders. I want to thank the new 18 insiders to the show. That's greatly appreciated. And we had four specific donations, individual donations. It's very appreciated. Our contest winner this time turned out to be a brand new insider. His name is Kurt Weiss. W-Y-S-E. And congratulations, Kurt, for being the winner of a Roku. Basically, I'll be emailing you, getting your address, and getting one shipped out to you. So again, congratulations to Kurt Weiss, a brand new insider who won our Roku. Maybe we'll do another promotion here in another week or so. But thanks for Kurt for contributing to the show. And for all of you that are already insiders and those that you have contributed money to the show to support this podcast. Jerry, hey, I'm watching you in chat. How are you tonight, Jerry? Welcome to the show. If you're a podcaster, we've updated PowerPress to 2.0.1. We've updated, Angelo did some bug fixes over the weekend. We've got that up. So he punched that online. And so make sure you update your PowerPress plugin if you haven't done so. As a reminder, we did not do any Saturday show. I did not do one because I promised my 7-year-old that I'd go to his last basketball game. And I went to that and had a great time and filmed it. I'll have a highlights reel for you guys to hear at some point. But, you know, it's kind of funny walking into your kid's basketball game and you break out the Mac Daddy EX1 Sony XD cam, and that definitely gets, wow, that's a camera. They start asking me, what television station are you from? And I'm like, my own, I'm my own television station. That gets some strange looks, it really does. But if you're going to record your kid and you got the gear, you got to break out the HD stuff. I had a lot of fun doing it. And he didn't make a goal, unfortunately, but his team is a really kind of a junior team in this league. So most of the kids are 4 to 5 inches bigger than his team. So they had their hands full, but they fared pretty well. And one thing I'll say is he's pretty aggressive. I think he's going to do well. And he's already telling me he wants to go out for flag football. So that's next. All right, we're going to get into content here. But hey, pick up an Audible book on me by going over to audiblepodcast.com/CES, audiblepodcast.com/CES to get a free book on me. We want to thank Audible for being a sponsor here. Their sponsorship's starting to wrap down. We got a couple weeks left. So you're only going to have like 2 weeks left to get a free book on me here, folks, okay? So if you haven't done it, do it now, all right? If nothing else, to support the show by going over to audiblepodcast.com/CES for that free book, and that will get you on the road to being able to enjoy some professionally read material I think that you'll really enjoy. And I'm really enjoying the most recent book that I picked up, IWAS. So I'm having fun with that one. All right, that's it. We'll talk about the last sponsor here in a few minutes. Haven't heard from my gadget show producer in the last couple of days to find out where we're at in that production standpoint. And hopefully we'll have a gadget show for you here soon. But got a lot of email comments at the end of the show today. And also I've got one voicemail to play for you. And that'll be, of course, at the end of the podcast tonight. Let me go ahead here and load up the show notes so we can get into the full-blown content. And, of course, we talked about, the tsunami and the earthquake and everything associated with that. But I'm sure you've heard about the Earth shifting on its axis 4 inches and the Japanese coastline moving by 8 feet. But one of the things that I didn't see reported in today is the earthquake actually shortened our day. Yes, the Earth slowed down by 1.6 microseconds. So based on this data and in this redistribution of mass, so, you know, a microsecond is a millionth of a second. So the Earth is spinning 1.6 microseconds shorter in a 24-hour period. And so I think that's kind of funny, but in 24 hours, that's equal to 86,400 seconds. So I don't think that we have to worry about. I don't think we're gonna get too much sleep back on that 1.6, or I mean, you know, we're not gonna lose too much productivity over that 1.6 microseconds. So I found that over at space.com. The NASA satellites, of course, showing the before and after pictures are just remarkable. I'm sure you guys have all seen those on all the major networks. I'm not going to bring those up for you tonight, but I have some links up here, some shots I hadn't seen before. And it basically was a spectral image of the population centers. And it basically dials into the areas a lot closer. And it shows the inundation zone and how far the water really went in. And I think this this one on Universe Today probably was the best one for actually being able to really get a little more detailed information. But it basically outlines the impact areas and how far the water went in and the change of the landscape and housing and all that stuff. So that was a good one. I'll share that one with you. I hadn't seen that shared anywhere else, but I have it in the show notes for you. Now, if you are thinking about buying a television, products from Toshiba, from Sony, Texas Instrument, you may want to make that move very quickly because it's being predicted that there's going to be significant shortages of NAND flash memory chips, which, of course, used for the iPhone, the iPad. They feel that there's going to be a significant shortage in Blu-ray, DVDs, PlayStations, and PCs from Sony. Of course, Texas Instrument is lost two of its plants that make wafers and DLP chips. So they say it's going to take to July to get those back up into production. Now, one thing you should take in consideration here is that Toshiba, is a pretty big maker of NAND flash. I think they do 20% or 40% of all flash memory chip across the entire all of Japan companies. And so I think we have to be aware that this could result in electronic shortages. Hitachi has six manufacturing facilities in the quake-struck area. All of them are closed, and that will affect Hitachi plasmas, plasma TVs, LCD TVs, camcorders, and DVD players. So if you're making, you know, any consideration, and I'm sure prices are going to go up because demand is going to go up and there's going to be less stock, be fully aware of what could be coming from shortages out of Japan. All right, let's shift gears here completely, and let's talk about the Fourth Amendment a little bit, and as it relates to technology and stuff going on with TSA. A 20-year-old Virginia man decided that he wasn't going to put up with the TSA, you know, this the radar scan and the body scan. So he decides that he was going to go ahead and get the pat down. And he decided that in order to get the pat down, he needed to be as near naked as possible. He didn't strip completely down. But what he had written on his chest was, and it's kind of funny here, he kind of got his letters backwards, or whoever was writing on him did it. The Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secured against unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated. So he's got that written on his chest. And the kid got arrested. He was held for a couple of hours by TSA, and he's filed a $250,000 lawsuit against TSA for basically being held that saying his civil rights were violated. And anyway, so pretty funny here what he did. So it's nice to see that there's a little bit of civil disobedience still going on, and this 21-year-old did not want to have to go through the back scanner. You have to give him a few points on originality in actually doing this and actually, you know, having it put on his chest. So anyway, he still has some court hearings to deal with this, but we'll see where that one goes. All right, let's talk just a little bit here about an individual that we all probably have known for many years. And the name Sean Parker should come, as everyone that's listening to the show should know who Sean Parker is. If you don't, then you haven't been listening to the show long enough. But you know that Sean Parker was, of course, the founder of Napster. And we know that Napster got whacked pretty hard and taken out by the majors. But you do know that Sean Parker is a co-founder and of Facebook. So I don't know how much money he's got, but I think it's in the billions. And he's considering making a bid for Warner Music. Now, what would happen if Sean Parker, again, the man behind Napster, decided that he would decides to buy Warner Music? Would that just be like the ultimate slap in the face? I wonder if he would look at the business model different for their slate of music that they have in movies. It would be interesting to watch. Time will tell. This article is over at techdirt.com. So anyway, kind of a, you know, it's almost out of spite. You know, you got to think about this guy. He's probably sitting back and he's got all this cash, or he's at least his stock wealth is worth so much. And he's thinking, you know, I got this money. You know, those guys stuck it to me when they really screwed me over on the Napster thing. So turn play is fair. Let me just go buy. Let me just go buy Warner Music. Oh, man. It would be good. It really would. And we'll see what develops. But I guess he's seriously considering it. Another article over in Tech Dirt. Yes, it's legal to tag someone in a photo on Facebook without permission. Apparently, some gal that had gotten tagged, they had tagged her holding a drink and drinking some alcoholic beverage when she wasn't supposed to be, because she was on a certain type of medicine, and it was used against her in a custody case. And basically, apparently the father had you know, this woman is endangering their children because of, you know, drinking while taking this, you know, on a certain prescription, you know, make her potentially incapacitated, not be able to basically safely take care of her children. But she sued to keep that picture out of the court case. And a judge has basically said that there's nothing within the law that requires one's permission when someone takes a picture and posts it on a Facebook page. There's nothing that requires one permission when she or he is tagged or identified as a person in those pictures. So anyway, at least here in the United States, you tag away, folks. They can still try to remove it, but they can tag. Go ahead, tag away. One thing that we learned over the, and this is a Slashdot article, one thing that we learned over the, about the internet, over the basically tragedy going down in Japan, is the internet, for the most part, stayed online. And I got a couple pretty cool stories about some things that happened and way people stay connected during the, basically when the phones were out. So Japan has a pretty good interconnection gateway within the country. And even though routes went down for periods of time, the system basically self-healed itself and was able to continue routing internet traffic without much delay. And so they talk about the redundancy and planning of the Japanese infrastructure, and it was pretty cool. So what they've come up with, I'll have a link up in the show notes for that. And phone lines and cell phones may have been down, but the internet rocked on. And a lot of people found lost relatives through Facebook or for Twitter. People actually went to people's homes and actually looked on people they didn't even know to make sure they were all right. So it's kind of cool how the social network worked in Japan over the past 3 or 4 days. Let's talk about a blogger. And he was in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And he wrote an article on his website where he linked to an ex-community leader to a high-profile mortgage fraud case. This individual apparently was involved and had been guilty of whatever he had been accused of doing. And even though this guy was accurate in his comments, and he did not say anything that was not true, so in other words, he didn't libel the guy, a jury still awarded the so-called victim here $35,000 for lost wages and $25,000 for emotional distress. And this is a two-year legal battle between the blogger and this individual that between the blogger and the guy that was suing the blogger. And the sad thing is, this guy that this blogger only had like 500 daily readers, so he had a pretty small blog. Now he's going to appeal the ruling, but he's, you know, he basically talked about someone and didn't did not at all misrepresent what this guy had done. And still, the jury found against him. And this is pretty scary stuff. So we'll see what happens here with this. And I think he needed a better lawyer. I just can't fathom that you write something true about someone and they sue you and still win. It was a pretty scathing blog post, supposedly. And but I don't know what the contents were, but. Anyway, $60,000 against a blogger for telling the truth. All right, the National Science Foundation and NASA have received the results of what they're calling the Planetary Science Decadal Survey, which recommends planetary exploration priorities for NASA between the 2013 and 2022 time period. The highlights of the recommendations include, number one, collect rocks on Mars. Number two, study Europa and orbit. And number three, orbit Uranus and and drop atmospheric probes. And so this is the top three things they've come up with goals for NASA for exploring planetary bodies here within our solar system. So anyway, that's out of that. I'll have a link in the show notes for you on this. But they want to get some rocks back from Mars. You know, I can almost tell you what they're going to find. They're going to find the same things they find here in rocks. Come on now. You know, we really need to bring rocks back from Mars. Let's just send some people there and have them look underneath the microscope there. Doesn't that make a lot more sense? Okay, let's talk. I'm kind of jumping all over the place here. I didn't have time to organize this in a real good order tonight, so I apologize for this. But if you're an AT&T DSL customer, man, I have got some bad news for you. Starting May 2nd, AT&T will impose 150 gig monthly limits on its current uncapped DSL service, while its fiber to the node U-verse subscribers will get 250 gigs. Boy, they're being generous here. AT&T says the move will affect less than 2% of customers and that it is necessary to address congestion in the network. So what they're going to do now, what they're going to do next, is that they say that those folks that exceed their monthly allowance will pay an additional $10 for each 50 gigs over the cap. Now, I kind of priced this out, and they're being just a little bit greedy still on their pricing. This should really be, even though it's 10 bucks for 50 gigs, that's, you know, that is not as bad as what Time Warner was putting forward before. So really, if you look at it and what they're charging, they're probably AT&T overhead is probably costing them a penny or two a gig on their own network. So, you know, 50 gigs for 10 bucks, you know, not the best deal in town, but at least you're going to be able to you'll just have to pay. AT&T tells ours, and this is over on Ars Technica, that customers will hear from them directly only when they had used more than their allotment three times over the life of the account. But they're saying that AT&T says an average DSL user on their network only transfers 18 gigs of files. I guess that means the network's pretty slow. If they're only moving the average customer only using 18 gigs. Give me a break. I just can't believe that. Not in today's age. You know, not if you're using Netflix, not if you're streaming some podcasts, you know, watching some live video. I had NHK live on this machine here for just essentially since Friday. It just run. And my wife had some other stuff going, some Japanese channels too. We're using band 150 gigs. Give me a break. Way to burn that this weekend. Okay, if you got a PlayStation 3 and you like hacking it, apparently the latest firmware edition, up to version 3.6, according to a hacker, says it looks pretty secure, saying that Sony may have finally got something right and that they may have actually got the system locked down a little bit. So they have to go back and start looking for a new hack. But at this time, the PlayStation 3 is secure, firmware secure, in the version 3.60 update. And you would think, with everything going on with Sony and them, you know, suing people and collecting names of who visited the site, that, you know, that they would have got it right. So anyway, that's the news on the PlayStation 3 update. A judge has okayed the federal government to access WikiLeakers' Twitter info. So this is bad news for those WikiLeakers. A federal judge has given the investigators access to the Twitter records of four WikiLeaker associates, including the email addresses associated with accounts and the IP addresses used to access them. All I can say is, if they're American citizens, stand by to be arrested. This is interesting. We'll see how this works out. This was fought. Electronic Frontier Foundation, the ACLU, had all basically said that the request for records violated federal law and free speech and privacy rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. They also said that the judge also denied the group's request to unseal investigator applications seeking the data from Twitter. So the delta here is, and where they were able to make this possible, and of course, all these Twitters are public, right? Because they were out there. It says the Twitter order does not demand the contents of any communication, and thus constitutes only a request for records, referring to a provision of the 1994 Stored Communication Act that permits the prosecutors to obtain contact details, IP address, and other information related to records stored online The Twitter order does not demand the content of any communication, and thus constitute only a request for records. Well, all the Twitter stuff is public anyway, except for direct messages. So it's not like they had asked for the Twitter information, right? So we will see where this goes. What do you guys think about this? Geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. All right, this next article should make all of us go, and I'm serious here. This one you really need to pay attention to. We all know that Apple announced that they're going to be taking a 30% cut of all applications and all services sold through the Apple App Store starting, I guess, June 1st. Well, there's been some investigation done, and it appears that the Apple iOS mobile operating system, now listen carefully, runs web applications at significantly slower speeds when they're launched from the iPhone or iPad home screen as opposed to in the Apple Safari browser. Okay, so now what's going on here is if you have an app and you can build an app that has nothing more than a browser in it, if you load the app and it loads your page or whatever information you're trying to put into the application, so basically you can make apps that are phone smart and make it almost looks like an app, but it's really HTML being rendered. They're saying if you do that, it loads slower than data that than data loads when you're actually doing it straight through Safari on the browser on the iPhone and the iPad. So basically, they're saying they're unclear whether these are accidental bugs or issues conscientiously introduced by Apple. But the end results, they're at least in some ways, the iOS platform makes it harder for web apps to replace native applications where the, this is interesting, isn't it? And they don't say how much slower. They don't break it down. But, oh, they do. They have the actual test listed as well. So this is over at theregister.co.uk. Have a link up in the show notes for you guys to check this out. So I didn't actually go into the test page itself and look at the procedures that they'd run. So I'll let you guys explore that yourself. But if this data holds true and Apple can't come back and explain itself on why, then I would be going, I really would. Now, Doc Searles over at blogs.law.harvard.edu/doc. Doc Searles wrote a good article entitled Earthquake Turns TV Networks into Print. And one thing that I noticed as I was watching the content on CNN, on Fox, on even PBS had some stuff up. I know that Al Jazeera, I didn't watch their station, was streaming live. NHK was streaming live. There was only basically one video feed or two coming out of Japan for 2 or 3 days. And Doc Searles is basically saying that at this point, news is really no longer about being live. It's all about just, you know, recorded short clips of content. And he says, you know, there's at this point in time, you know, the television are not much better than print. He said he looked at NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, CNN, CBC, and BBC Online, and all have recorded reports. None have live coverage on the net. They are, after all, TV networks, and all TV networks are prevented from broadcasting live. What? He says that all TV networks are prevented from broadcasting live on the net, either by commercial arrangement with the cable and satellite TV distributors or by laws that exclude viewing from IP addresses outside of national boundaries. Well, I tell you, to be honest with you, this kind of contradicts what I saw with NHK. That I was able to watch NHK on Ustream. Now, maybe they made that for a, maybe they did that as just as a special type of thing. But he goes on to say TV has become entirely an entertainment system rather than a news one. Yes, news matters to TV networks, but it's gravy. Mostly they're entertainment business that also do news. I think that's agree pretty much even to CNN. Obviously they didn't have people on the ground initially, and it took us a while, and they're now starting to see today was some Anderson Cooper and some others had some stuff from the, but there was really nothing truly live. It was just pre-recorded sound bits that they played over and over and over and over again. So anyway, good report write up by Doc Searles. You guys check this out. Let me know whether you agree with him or not. And I think it's true. You look at the stations, and most of them are, it's not about giving the news. It's about slants and opinions and entertainment and packaging. It's no longer about just giving you the straight facts. I think NHK in Japan did a pretty good job giving just the straight facts. They were as close to what news really used to be in the United States, for sure. Apparently, if you guys are watching this now, if you haven't picked up your iPad 2, Apple stores are going to be opening early in the United States. They're going to be opening an hour early. Apparently, they've got some more shipments in, and they're going to be making them available. So if you're still looking to get your iPad and you want to risk it, you can go to an iPad store and be available to walk in at 9 a.m. And pick up your new iPad. I became familiar with Etsy about 2 months ago. How many of you know what Etsy is? It's basically an auction site that sells a variety of stuff. And it's become a very popular site where people that sell crafts, knickknacks, that type of stuff. And my wife, I know, goes over there a lot. I think I've been to the website once or twice. But Etsy made a change to their interface. And basically, Etsy people are really upset because this new paid people search tool enables crafters and artisans to sell their, basically, it allows people to search what other people have bought and see what they've purchased on their profile page. And they didn't announce this change. So basically, if I went over there and I looked for my wife's account, I'd be able to, and I knew what her username was, excuse me, I'd be able to find out what she had purchased on Etsy. And I know probably some ladies and even some guys probably don't want their significant others to always know what they bought. But there is a place to change that in the privacy policies on Etsy. So if you're an Etsy user, you want to get over there and make sure you block your favorites and also block your purchases from just the average Joe checking it out and then building a profile on you. So anyway, I have this link up. And this was over at ArsTechnica.com. All right, I had to laugh today. Google is basically making a big to-do about Blogger. And be honest with you, I haven't used Blogger in probably, I had an account when it first came out. But I haven't really used Blogger in a long, long, long time. But Blogger is pretty happy with where they're at from a user standpoint and how people are using Blogger. And they're rolling out some potentially new interface looks. And they're basically, they haven't rolled them out yet, but they're giving us a sneak peek. And it looks to me like they're following the kind of the interface of WordPress a little bit. They got a little bit of a dashboard and some control features and so forth. So anyway, they're getting ready to roll out some updates for those of you that are using Blogger. What are you guys using? Do you guys, how many of you have a Blogger account? I don't. I still have one, but I don't. Again, I haven't been on there in years. And I guess a lot of people are still using Blogger. They're saying that 250,000 words are being added to Blogger I guess every hour, which is a huge number. That's like so many novels an hour. And they go through a full stats thing on their 2-minute, 22-second self-promotion of the service. So anyway, I have the link up in the show notes for you. But, you know, I was thinking, Blogger? People still use Blogger? I'm pretty serious. I didn't know people were still using Blogger. Hey, we're on Macworld. They've done some comparisons of the iPad 2 versus Motorola Zoom and Samsung Galaxy Tab on cameras. And basically what they've done on still image quality, they've rated the, and they also brought in some, why did they bring in a camera? Let me look at this. They brought in a Canon PowerShot S95, took a picture of the, with that, then they used the iPhone 4, the Motorola Zoom, Samsung Galaxy, iPod Touch, and the Apple iPad 2. And basically, from top to bottom, they were ranked with the iPhone 4 having a 66.2 score, Motorola Zoom having 64.8, Samsung Galaxy having a 63.6, the iPod Touch having a 58, which was considered poor, and the Apple iPad 2 as a 57.8, bottom of the stack. So again, iPhone 4 was 66.2 and the Apple iPad 2 at 57.8. And then they break out the difference in pictures. And you look at the Zoom, you look at the Galaxy Tab, and you look at the iPad 2, and it's very obvious that the Motorola Zoom and the Samsung Galaxy Tab do a lot better. In real bright pictures, it looks like the Apple iPad 2 did pretty good. But overall, it looked like the Apple iPad 2 almost finished last the entire time. Now, they go on to say the overall video quality scores were the iPhone 4 was number one with a 71.6, Motorola Zoom at 64.4, Apple iPad 2 60.6, Cisco Flip Video Ultra HD at 60.4, Apple iPod Touch at 58.8, and the Samsung Galaxy Tab at 58. So at this point, the Apple iPad 2 only really ranked third on video quality, and they actually have some comparisons here, some same exact videos shot, put up on YouTube, and wow, you look at one of these, it's horrible. The colors on it is just horrendous. Specifically, which unit was that? Galaxy Tab. Oh my gosh, horrible. Anyway, you guys can check these out, look at the video quality difference on this article. This is a good one. Done by Macworld, gives you all the information. If the camera is the key point for you, you'll definitely want to check that out. All right, let's talk. I got two or three of you sent me this link, and this is pretty amazing. What Apple did, and I think any company that worth their salt probably treated their customers and their associates the same. But it's talking about Apple's role in Japan during the earthquake. And essentially what Apple did was, you know that the train system shut down. And in Japan, many times you have to travel by train maybe 45 minutes to get from your where you live to where you work. And to walk that distance would be, you know, tens of hours, you know, to get to that location if you had to walk. And taking a taxi, it might be $300-$400 for the taxi fare. So what Apple did was they didn't close the store after the earthquake. They stayed open. They had their Wi-Fi available. They let people come in and watch video on news on Ustream. They let people contact their families via Twitter and Facebook and email. They basically brought out more chargers. They brought out power strips, basically letting people get their phones charged. All kinds of cool stuff. That was kind of what they did for the general public. And then at 11 o'clock p.m., they closed the store and they let their associates stay in the store. Now, it's a 5-story complex in this one particular Apple store, and they have a theater and some other things there too. So they let the associates stay at the store, and even they let family members who were close that could get there come in, and they fed them. They actually went out immediately upon the occurrence of the earthquake and had bought food. So this was pretty cool. And there's a whole list of stuff that they allowed them to do. And really, they told people, if you know, after a couple of days, if you need to, or the next day, you need to get home, we'll pay for the taxi. If you can't get home, we'll pay for the hotel. So Apple really did take care of their associates significantly, and still are. And they even said, if you have to get a hotel room, which hotel rooms were going for much as $800 a night, because only the luxury hotels had vacancies, they say, we'll pay for it. Wow. Very cool stuff by Apple and taking care of the employees there in Japan during the earthquake. And it doesn't say who this individual was. They also talked about some American associates that were there visiting. Pretty cool. So anyway, I have the link up in the show notes. You guys can check out the full details yourself. Congressional hearings have been going on today, where basically they've been really looking at some radical measures here to rid the internet of rogue websites accused of piracy. We already know that they've been taking websites down, but some of the stuff that's being considered is really goes beyond even what they've done from a seizure perspective. They're looking at forcing Google to tweak its algorithm to punish pirate sites, building up a blacklist sites where basically they're removed from search results. You know, they've already seized over 100 domain names already. But the Hollywood people were there, and so were the movie folks, you know, audio folks, and they're all sobbing and crying how these sites were costing them so much money and how many millions of copyright notice takedowns that they have submitted and frustrated that they can't get Google to cooperate and so forth. So we'll see what happens here. But they want the plug pulled on these sites, and they want legislation to force it to happen. And I don't know. We'll see what happens with this. But there's representatives on both sides of the aisle that are for it, and there's representatives on both sides of the aisle that are against it. But anyway, this is pretty scary stuff here. You know, the government's going to do what the government's going to do, but pretty significant when they go in and tell business, hey, you can't list these folks. You have to remove this listing. And that is scary. And not from a pirate perspective, but from a First Amendment, the freedom of speech and being able to express yourself. And while that may not be considered expressing yourself, having a pirate site, you think that they should be able to take these sites down through other legal recourses and not forcing Google to go in and pull the plug on them. If they're so worried, you go and file a lawsuit and you get that site, taken down through a restraining order, and you go into then and you get an injunction against it and do what you have to do from the legal process. But they want this to all be done by the government for free, and they don't want to have to go to court. I think they should have to use due process here on these sites. Do you guys know South by Southwest is going on right now? Have you heard very much out of South by Southwest? I've heard some stuff. I'm going to show you a video of why I'm not at South by Southwest here in a few minutes. I was talking with Jeff, our content director. He's there, and he says, you'd have hated it. He says, you can't move. The hallways are full. You can't get into sessions. He says, there's entirely too many people. You have to stand in lines to get food, get drinks, go to the bathroom. He says, this is not fun. And it's just wall to wall, a mass of people. And they've completely overgrown the convention center, obviously oversold it. He thinks that there's might even be potential fire code violations because it's so full. Because he said, I wouldn't have to want to get out of here in a hurry. But anyway, they're saying that it's all about apps at South by Southwest. Yet, I've only seen Robert Scoble talk about one app they thought was cool. It's called Local Mind. And so he's got a video up on it. You can check it out. Only 2,715 people have watched this video. This for the coolest app at South by Southwest, and only 2,715 people have watched it. Fail. Apparently, what Local Mind is what happens when Quora and Foursquare get together and have a baby. Now, you can ask people where you are near questions. So, if in other words, you're my friend and I'm at the Apple Store, you can ask me via this service whether or not they've got iPad 2s for sale. You can ask people questions about where there's good music. And basically, they know where you're at because you're giving up your location. You know, we're being tracked too much. I don't want people to know when I'm in a store. I don't want people to know when I'm, that's a level of it's dangerous too. Okay. I'm being tracked over here at the Apple Store in Ala Moana. Means my house is empty. You know, this is at some point we have to really start looking at what we're going to allow people to do with our data on where we're at. Twitter has come out swinging. And this is, I'm just blown away by where they have went with their developer roadmap. This is, Twitter has basically spit. And that's being a nice word that I just use, spit. I would have rather used another word that started with S. But they basically said, if you make a Twitter client, you have a bit of time to get out of that business. Get out. He says, if you're thinking about running one, don't. We own it. Number two, Twitter wants to control how tweets are presented everywhere. That means if you have an app that displays them, you'd better read the new terms of service. You aren't allowed to do that anymore. They did say, oh, analytics are okay for now if you want to do measurement. So there's no mention of Instagram, TwitPic, Foursquare, or any of the other value-added stuff. But, you know, Twitter's getting a little too big for their britches. How many of you are just using the Twitter app versus one of the other apps? So basically, all these developers that build all these apps that have grown this platform, you know what the folks at Twitter are doing? Is they're holding up their middle finger and tell them, go away. Because what it is, this is what it is, folks. They figured out that the only way they're going to be able to make money is through the apps. And if other people are building apps that do the same thing, they're not going to be able to get that revenue stream because it's going to fragment the people that are using and not getting the Twitter experience as Twitter wants it to have. This is a bomb. Dave Weiner at scripting.com is like, hey, I'm fine to leave. I'm happy to cut the cord. You know, and Twitter is a microblogging platform, but it only has so much reach. Facebook is killing them as far as being able, links coming back. I get 10 times as much traffic from Facebook as I do from Twitter because I'm not limited to the stupid 143 characters or whatever it is that they allow us. Now, Facebook has its own issues, and I have an article that you guys are not going to like me to talk about Facebook, the way that some are, but if I get to it here before I run out of time, basically, they're calling Facebook the new AOL. Dvorak is. We'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, what do you think about Twitter basically telling developers, go away. You mind your own business. You can't be in this business no more. We're controlling it now. That sounds like a bunch of crybabies. I'm serious. What a bunch of crybabies. Biting the hand that feeds you. Twitter, shame on you. You should be absolutely shamed. Shame on you, Twitter. If you want to know what it's like in North Korea, I'm really switching gears on you. On Gizmodo, there's a link to a guy that captured a secret video. He was walking around with a Canon 5D. The security forces there didn't know it could record video, so he'd practice. He got a lot of cool coverage. I don't know why he took some of it of him getting a haircut, but the link will be up in the show notes if you want to see the ultra-clean, no trash, no people on the streets, North Korea. If you've got the iPad 2, apparently the iMovie on the iPad 2 is faster to edit videos and render them than a MacBook Pro. And they've proven that. Why? It's because the iPad 2 has a dedicated H.264 chip, which is similar to the outboard USB dongles that the companies make for video processing. So this probably isn't very shocking, but it is kind of interesting that the iPad 2, yes, the iPad 2 is outperforming the MacBook Pro in video editing processing. Amazing. Asa Dolzer is not happy with Microsoft about making claims. Basically, Microsoft is saying, hey, we're the only ones that has full hardware acceleration. And, of course, IE9 is launching today. And Asa does not mince words. He says they're lying. They're making beep, beep claims about hardware acceleration. He says they are deceiving people. Asa, all I can say is, get Firefox 4 launched and get your own message out there. Come on. Microsoft, I call on you to stop making this wrong claim now. You do not have full hardware acceleration, and what you do have is less complete than Firefox. Continue to lie about IE9 and Firefox as a service to users and to your own engineering team. He's got a link to technical data. Very upset about this. Now, if you're still on XP, sorry, you can't go to IE9. And they're not going to let you. And it just won't upgrade. So be aware of that if you're still running on XP, okay? This is the 5-year anniversary of the NASA orbiter. The Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter started circling Mars in March of 2006. This is the 5-year anniversary. Congratulations to the Mars orbiter. We're looking at an arrival of a probe at Mercury this week. At 8:45 p.m. on Thursday, or 0045 GMT, March 18th, the Messenger spacecraft will fire its main thrusters for 14 minutes to slow its down enough to enter orbit around Mercury. If all goes well, Mercury is expected to spend the next year studying the solar system's innermost planet, mapping Mercury's surface, investigating its composition and magnetic environment. This is from space.com. Thank you, space.com. And, boy, I tell you, the Russians have gotten smart. They have learned to become capitalists very quickly, even though their society isn't completely capitalistic. It's half mob run. Oh, loaded the wrong one. Let me bring this back up here. Copy, paste, and go. There we go. NASA is going to get charged $63 million per seat to hitch a ride on the Soyuz spacecraft. The original price for that was a cool $57 million, but inflation has raised the price to $63 million per seat. I wonder if that's each way. Oh, that's an increase from 55.8. Excuse me. So anyway, under the deal, NASA's have to pay for 6 round trips. So yes, do the math, folks. $360-some million of your taxpayer dollars are going to go to the Russian Federation to take our astronauts to the International Space Station because we don't have a vehicle ready. And NASA's saying, hey, you private firms, get your butts in gear. We've got business for you. So fly American, right? Of course, we don't have nothing to fly American. Maybe the Chinese will come in and say, hey, you can fly Chinese. And maybe they'll do it for a discount. They're using slave labor already. So, you know, might as well introduce slave labor into their space industry. That'd be kind of scary, right? Having to fly to the International Space Station and on a Chinese piece of gear, the guys would probably get sick. Probably they'd use aluminum foil for the skin of the spacecraft. Who knows, you know? Oh, boy. Torrent Freak has a good article on 5 reasons why the U.S. domain seizures are unconstitutional. This was, I don't know who actually wrote this up for them. But basically, it goes into government seizing domains with no prior notice. Seizures of protected speech without a hearing violates First Amendment. They're basically saying that there's no reason to be worried about an accuser fleeing with their domain because it's not like they can move the domain. Said that there's an unacceptable risk of wrongful seizure. So it just goes on and on and on here. But they got a pretty good article on basically 5 reasons why U.S. domain seizures are unconstitutional. And they have to prove, I guess they have to prove that in court. I don't know how much luck they're going to have with the current, basically, way the administration is moving forward on this stuff. Police have returned seized hardware to Victorious BitTorrent admin. The gear was trashed. Apparently, 2 administrators of FileSoup, the longest-standing BitTorrent community, who had their cases dropped by authorities and were free once again, their personal belongings were returned after it had been raided in 2009. And wait to see this. If you get your stuff seized by the feds or by the police, all I can say is you're not going to want to see how his stuff was returned. Plastic bags look like they've been dragging through the mud. Stuff tore apart. Drives jammed back in. You know, it basically looks ugly. And, of course, this gear doesn't look like it was too modern even when it was seized. But he says none of it will boot. A lot of it's not working. They're still doing an inventory to make sure they get everything back. But he's going to consult his lawyer. Good luck on that one. Hope you had backups. All right, here's why I am not at South by Southwest this year. Those of you that are watching the video are going to get to see this, and I'll just try to give you a play-by-play for those of you that are listening. And this is over on the Windows Stream blog, and I'm going to go to a YouTube video. And this is basically the hallway of South by Southwest. And let me flip over here to this and play this for you guys. Let's see here. Oh. Okay, it starts off by looking at some weird bears or something. Let me expand this. Okay, so. And then it goes into the hallway. And people are like jumping. This is supposed to be like some flash mob. But look at all the people not moving. And they're just jumping around, having fun. Girls are holding on to their tops because they're jumping up and down. They're waving and screaming and being idiots. This is why I am not, one of the reasons why I am not at South by Southwest. Maybe I'm getting too old for this. Are you being throttled by Clear? Well, apparently Clear has an 8 gig per month cap. It's not being noticed. No one said anything about it, but somewhere someone has figured out once you exceed 8 gigs of data, you get throttled. I didn't know that, and I guess probably that's part of my issue. Because I know I use more than 8 gig a month. I'm going to skip some articles here because we're running short of time. Hey, if you're a basketball fan, I'll have a link up for you to get a March Madness calendar, and you can basically load it into Outlook if you're using Outlook to keep you up to speed on March Madness. John C. Dvorak wrote an article, "The Ghetto Called Facebook," and boy, he is just wow. I know many of you love Facebook, but he says, "The way I see it, Facebook's main competitor is Second Life. But while Second Life would represent something like a good fantasy novel, Facebook is more like a reality TV show. Things are kind of real, but they're not. And like a reality TV show, Facebook is enclosed, controlled, and manipulated. And in all, it's weak and without substance." He says, "I think it's brilliant that the boys at Facebook were taking on Netflix by developing their own streaming service. It's yet another hinge on the door used to lock people into the self-contained world of Facebook." He says, "I've said it before in this column, and I'd like to remind people that what I think of Facebook, it is the second coming of AOL. It's what AOL should have been, morphed into if it hadn't failed. It's a community evolved from the ideas of MySpace and LiveJournal, a number of AOL ideas all rolled into one. Cognate vision of Mark Zuckerberg's vision of Facebook was made in the image of his own introverted self with a little Second Life thrown in." Wow. Do you guys think Facebook is just like AOL? You guys know I despise AOL, right? I do like Facebook. Are we all just like using Facebook like we use AOL? And come to think of it, some of it, yes. He's got a point. He really does. And over at Ogizmo, they've got a pretty cool solar power. Basically, it's a mobile solar power unit. Pretty cool. I have that link up in the show notes for you. If you want to watch stuff that's going on South by Southwest live, I'll have a schedule for you up on an article that was up on GigaOhm. If you're looking at getting more out of your Apple TV and the iOS 4.3 upgrade, you want to check this article out over at ZDNet talking about AirPlay and how the functionality has really gotten to the point where it's usable and where people are upgrading the usability of Apple TV. And I haven't played with my Apple TV in a while, so I'm going to have to check this out for sure. If you are a Windows user and you want to remote media stream content off your computer, you do know that Windows Media Center allows you to do that. You can share media. It can allow you to remotely log into your computer on travel. I'll have that link up in the show notes for you as well. You can see I'm speeding up here because we got a lot of other stuff to go over for email and a voicemail comment. Office 15 screenshots have been leaked. So if you want to see what Office 15 is going to look like, I guess they're calling it, why don't they call it Office 2011 instead of Office 15? Maybe that's the official word. But anyway, new screenshots of that are out. If you're a Time Warner cable user in the lower 48, not in Hawaii, the turkeys, you're going to be able to download their iPad app, and you're going to be able to watch 32 channels on an iPad. You know, why don't Time Warner make this available to everyone for a small fee? There's a few channels on here since we've cut the cord that I would like to watch. Interesting. You know, we've been watching as much stuff as we can live on our computer from CNN, Fox, and stuff that they stream live. But there's a few channels here I can't get anywhere else. But you, if you're in the lower 48, you can get this iPad app, 32 channels, and you'd be able to log in and watch stuff on your iPad from within Time Warner's network. You can't be off traveling somewhere. You have to be on their network. Sadly, today, Microsoft purportedly has killed the Zune hardware, and they're going to focus on software instead. We'll get in touch with Rob Greenlee, try to do that this weekend and find out what the real scoop is on that, if he can reveal it to us. But apparently Zune hardware is going bye-bye, and they're going to be focused on software. With Windows Phone 7, I think we probably all saw this coming, because a lot of that information or a lot of that interface is built into Windows Phone 7. Again, IE9 is launching, so I have and that's going to happen at 9 p.m. Pacific. So that's actually probably already out. So if you want to upgrade, you can. I'll have some links for you to check out for some of the new features for IE9. Boxy's announced that they are going to take a page out of Apple's playbook, and they're going to be taking a 20% cut of transactions through their platform, which makes me kind of curious how this is really going to happen, because I guess if they process it, they're going to take 20%. That's still a huge cut. So we'll see. We'll see what this goes. But Boxy is obviously looking to make money, and they're going to take 20% cut, again, of transactions through their platform. Probably the coolest Mac app today that I found was called Stream to Me, and this was originally an app for your iPad and your iPhone. Stream to Me is now available via the Mac App Store, and it's for your Mac. Check this out. It is really cool. Basically, you can use one Mac to pull data that's on another. Very cool stuff. You can get access to your library, watch movies and videos and stuff as well. And, you know, those body scanners, it's been reported that they're emitting up to 10 times more radiation than inspected. Some of the maintenance people have found. So what they said is not so harmful, obviously, is a little more harmful than what they're originally purporting. So that's it for tonight for regular content. Let me go ahead and get into the voicemail comments here real quick. And then we'll get the emails knocked out before I go way too long. And this is a short one, and I think I already listened to it. You guys are going to like this. Let me turn the volume up here.
Hey, Todd. This is Richard from Columbus, Georgia. I just have one comment. Drupal. Drupal. Drupal.
Drupal. Drupal?
Enjoy not the show. Drupal?
Drupal. Not Drupal. Drupal. I kind of like Drupal better. It sounds like a certain semi-celebrity. Drupal. Thanks for the clarification. It's appreciated. Let me go ahead and get into the comments here real quick. Got an email from Mark, longtime listener of the show. Say, hey, Todd, after listening to your show and reading your posts for the last 6 years, I decided to finally start writing out some of the articles that play out my head. I put them on a free WordPress blog for now, but if it becomes something, I'll move it to a purchased domain. I've given you some good and bad feedback on your show over the years, so if you get a chance, I'd appreciate your feedback. Check out tmark.wordpress.com. And thanks for your comments also, Mark, on asking about the family in here in Hawaii and Japan. So tmark.wordpress.com. You guys check that. I'll have a link up in the show notes. I want to thank Jim for providing me the link to the Kevin Rose blog and the Apple roll in Japan. Appreciate that. I got an email from you, and he's one of our Tech Podcast Network members. He says, hey, I spent today making a promo video for Bagel Tech News. He said, maybe you'd like to be enough to feature the promo, push the video. I'd be grateful. I'll have this link up in the show notes. You guys will get a kick out of seeing how Ewan creates this show. It's a 3-hour video compressed into 3 minutes, and I think you'll have a lot of fun watching it. Got an email here from Russell who says, "Hey, Todd, thought you might find this interesting for the show. Good article about one of the nuke plants and what happened in Japan." So I have that link up in there. Basically, it's entitled, "Why I'm Not Worried About Japan Nuclear Reactors." Next link up will be is from Bruce. He said, "Hey, Todd, saw this and thought it might be of interest. Eavesdrop and send power through 2.5-inch metal." This is an article from the Register, and it's entitled, "Through Metal Comms, Something Power Reinvented." So I have this link up in the show notes. I did not get a chance to see that yet. We talked about this on the last show, but Ms. Smallbiz sent this link in, said, "Thought you might be want to drop this in the show. Surprised NASA didn't tout this. NASA told the space, basically talking about Voyager. Of course, we talked about Voyager in the last show, but again, NASA told the spacecraft to maneuver and use its gyros. They actually used gas to move it. They didn't use a gyro. The gyro stabilizes, but they used the gas to actually rotate the aircraft. So it says, allow collection of data 33 days after launch at the very edge of the solar system. Check out the scrolling distance from sun and earth on the left, too. As when I looked at it, it was getting closer to the earth, yet further from the sun. Earth obviously moving around the sun must be getting closer to Voyager." I think those spacecraft did one of these. They didn't go outbound. They kind of did up. So I think they're out of the plane, out of the Earth's, out of our solar system plane or planet plane. They went in opposite directions. I don't know if that's, technically they could be getting closer. So, but thanks for that, Ms. Smallbiz. I got an email here from Near. He says, "Todd, I'm a heavy user of Skype. Try to divert all my internet calls in as much as possible to this channel. The price is right. Quality is excellent. If you have good broadband connection, both ends, and I find the conference feature very useful. I do not mind any ads in the Skype may put up. They have set up a standard and a business model that others have a difficult time competing with. Good for them. I don't mind if ads will take part of the screen. Let them monetize Skype in whatever way possible. All the best, Near." Near, I did get your email on another topic as well. I've got you on my list, so be advised. And basically, I think I'll start the list now. You want to go to CES 2012? Let me know now. We'll be starting planning meetings in 3 months. Near indicated he may want to come out for to CES this year. Hey, Rick sent me a link. He said, "Thought it's your interest talking about Adobe Flash 10.2 leaked. Works on Zoom and other devices." Got an email here from Chris Newman. He said, "Hey, Todd, check this series of 3 short articles on body scanners. By the way, you should bookmark Bruce Shiner's website. He is on the ball when it comes to security and security theater. Thanks for that." He says, You guys have it easy being able to opt out of the scan and have a pat down. At UK airports, if selected for scan, there's no option of a pat down. If you won't go through the scanner, you can't fly, and you won't get a refund from your travel agent either. And to make it worse, this information is buried in the small print of the airport website. The travel agents and others won't tell you this up front. Help us all with your wife's family, given the recent tragedy in Japan. Thanks again, Chris, for this. And I'll link these articles up that you've got here for the full body scanners. Tracker Tom sent me the email on a TSA to retest body scanners, basically on finding that some of the machines were 247 machines were showing radiation levels 10 times higher than expected. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Let's see here. Where else am I at? I got to look at the date on the last show. Make sure I haven't covered. Yeah, I got a couple more here. Got an email from Stephanie. Unfortunately, talking about Charlie Sheen. Before they started a trend that will be so hard to end, until Americans get over their love of cheap Chinese stuff, we'll always be behind manufacturing. Oh, no. This is about, okay. This, I had an email exchange with her. This is what she says. "Hi, Todd. America will recover our position as a global leader of manufacturing goods only when Americans recover from their love of cheap. For this love, I personally blame Walmart, where cheap is king. American-made goods will need to be significantly more expensive than Chinese-made goods." Stephanie. Here's the thing, too, to remember, Stephanie. Now they're talking about doing mini Walmarts. You remember you used to have a local mini, like a mini mart or a small store? Well, now Walmart says they're going to go from these 180,000 square foot huge supermarkets, and they're going to start pushing little small 30,000 square foot satellite supermarkets across the country as well. So don't worry, that's all you'll be to shop at soon. It's just Walmart. I got an email from Don. "Hey, I just want to make sure. Oh. Oh, Don asked me about the video. Look for the embed below the actual video post, Don. That was where the actual embed was, not the embed from the live stream. Thanks for John thinking about us over the tsunami. Rick as well. Susabel. And then Brandon had an email for me. I'm not sure I stumbled upon your podcast from Minnesota, stumbled upon it with my phone. But anyways, I managed to catch a bit of your rant with your provider wireless, with your provider. Where so I believe it was. This topic came, okay, but what does this respond to? I'm not sure how I stumbled across your podcast. Connectivity issues after the iPad 2 question. Let me tag this and come back to this next show. Brandon, I'm not quite following exactly what you were saying in this, but I'll go back and reread it. I'll cover it in the next show. I'm long. I need to shut down. Hey, everyone, thanks for writing in. Keep your comments coming. We have a lot of great emails, a lot of great feedback this time. Lots of links. Geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. 619-342-7365. Everyone, thanks for staying subscribed, being part of the family, sharing the show with your friends and family members, people that you know. Obviously, keep Japan and your thoughts and prayers. It is appreciated. And I have more information on the 24-hour podcast and my appearance on that. I hope you'll come out and support. Donate your money to the American Red Cross and make sure it's flagged for Japan. You can do that on the American Red Cross website. That's a good way to make sure you get cash into the Japanese system to help those folks over there. All right, folks, that's it. We'll see you next time, everyone. Take care and aloha.